everyone. My name is Eric Bowe, and welcome to the Primal Shopper Podcast. This podcast is for marketers, entrepreneurs, and academics interested in understanding why we shop the way we do. My goal is to focus on primal motivations driving our behaviors and how to apply these learnings to improve your marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. I'll include any links in the show notes, and so let's get on with the show. As I record this podcast, many people are in the midst of planning for 2020, setting up their marketing budgets, trying to figure out how much to spend. For most, it's zero fun trying to figure out exactly how much to spend, what's enough, possibly what's too much. You know, if you ask experts, they say roughly you should be spending about 2 to 5% on marketing. Talk the SBA, and they say for small businesses, 7 to 8%. The question is that too much? Is that enough? Or are you just picking a percent out of the air and hoping that it'll work out? Bottom line, marketing is an investment, not a cost. And your budget should be built to achieve your revenue goals. And that's what I want to talk about today, is really a different way of doing it, taking a little bit of new school with reverse ROI, with old school, which is Dark Side of the Moon, a little bit of Pink Floyd in there. For those of you who are aware of what Dark Side of the Moon is, if you're not, don't worry, I'll cover it when I get to it. Reverse ROI is an interesting way to do budgeting, and I'm going to cover that today. I'm going to define what it means. I'm going to discuss how it is used to get to your revenue goal. And then I'm going to touch on sort of filling the gap that you will identify as a part of doing reverse ROI, and that's where the Dark Side of the Moon comes in. So with that said, let's get on with our ROI discussion. As I walk through reverse ROI and the discussion of it, I'm going to keep the numbers light. I don't want this to be a very heavy story about numbers. I will touch on a few just to illustrate how reverse ROI works. But let's start first by defining what ROI, or return on investment, is. In my career, I've done many different ROI analyses, and usually it deals with channel-specific ROI. For example, in email or direct marketing, what you would do is take a list of people, whether you send a direct marketing piece out or email, and let's say you put a coupon in there, what you would do is put a control group in there also. So let's say 90% of the people got the offer, 10% didn't. Then you could test what the conversion rate was between the treated group and the control group. And from there, you can calculate out your ROI, or return on investment, based on that. But this is a different approach. I'm not talking about a single channel here. I'm talking about your entire budget. And our discussion on reverse ROI begins with a simple question. And the question I'm going to ask you now: if you spent no money on marketing in 2020, how much revenue would you generate? Obviously, the question is thought-provoking, especially when I ask clients, because you just don't shut your marketing off. But if you did, how much revenue would you generate? I have looked at this question in different industries. I looked at it for travel, in grocery, in household appliances. And for example, with travel, typically you get about 50 to 60% if you're an established resort or destination. A fair portion of people come back on a regular basis because it's habit, it's a ritual, it's what they do. Grocery is a lot more than that. It could be up 80 to 90% because with grocery in particular, people operate on even more habit. Every week we go to get groceries. We typically go to the same stores. Often it's more than one store, but you typically go to the same places every time. Take a look at a more infrequent purchase, like let's say a garage door opener, which I did some work on. It's less than 25% because garage door openers last about 15 years. It's not a frequent purchase, obviously. So when you go to buy it, it's not like you're operating on something you do on a regular basis. So the infrequency sort of levels the playing field, and all brands have the same opportunity to earn the customer over. So 20%, I'm throwing that number out there, that might even be a little high. The reasons for this line, I like to call it a habit line. Some people may call it a loyalty line, but it's the people who are operating on habit, and marketing really isn't affecting them one way or the other. They're going to come no matter what. They'll come back to your grocery store, they'll come back to the resort, or they may just buy the garage door opener because they looked up in their ceiling and said, hey, I've got a LiftMaster garage door opener, so I'm just going to buy the same one. the shopper's not overthinking it. They're just going to buy the same garage door opener, and that's sort of where you get the habit line for that type of product. To walk you through how reverse ROI works, I'm going to create a fictitious resort called Bow Mountain, and it's in Michigan. It has golfing during the summer. Let's say that we have three courses in our Bow Mountain Resort, and in the winter we have skiing and other family type of entertainment. Now, in thinking about a resort, our revenue goal, let's just say for 2020, is $30 million. And let's say our habit line is 60%. That's roughly about $18 million we will get in 2020 without spending any money on marketing. However, this is a key part about reverse ROI. Marketing needs to contribute 40%, or roughly $12 million, for us to hit our revenue goal for Bow Mountain Resort. So the next question is, how much money do I want to spend in marketing to get to that $12 million? And this is where the ROI calculation comes in. For example, let's say for every $1 we spend, we want 4 in return, or in other words, a 1-to-4 ratio on ROI. This would equate to roughly about $2.4 million in marketing funds. So what is in that? The key part of looking at this is that what we're estimating out is what our incremental marketing costs are. This could be media. This could be creative production, agency fees. And it may or may not include internal staff. That's really up to how you want to use it. But the $2.4 million is what I need to spend in order to get to my $12 million. That's sort of the whole crux of it. Now the question is that the right ROI for me? Or did I just pull 4-to-1 out of the air and either A, I'm spending too much, or B, I'm going to sit there at the end of 2020 and go, I didn't spend enough and I'm not going to hit my $30 million revenue goal. So how do I figure this out? Luckily for us, Bow Mountain Resort, although fictitious, has been around for many years. So what I would do is I would take that habit line of 60% and I would look at historical budgeting. I would look at my revenue I achieved by year and how much I spent on marketing and calculate out based on the 60% habit line, what was historical ROIs over the last 5 years, let's say. Now, let's say I did these calculations and I found out in the prior 3 years, I averaged a 2-to-1 ratio. That means basically for every dollar I spent, I got 2 in return, or a 2-to-1 reverse ROI. If I budget to 4-to-1, that would be a heck of a leap, and I would actually underestimate the amount of money I need to create that revenue, and I would probably have a shortfall at the end of 2020. In general, when you look at these ratios, the more established, the more known your brand is, the more likely you can use a higher ratio, like a 4-to-1, a 5-to-1, a 6-to-1. However, if you are launching a new brand or your brand is not as well known, you're going to have to spend more money and your ratio might be 1-to-1 or 2-to-1, which sounds like a lot, but this is sort of where you're getting into how is my marketing as an investment contributing to revenue? So that's the first part of our discussion, and really what is reverse ROI and how do you calculate it? Now I want to switch gears. I want to go a little retro on you. So let's talk about the dark side of the moon. For Pink Floyd fans out there, you know the iconic cover of the Dark Side of the Moon. For those of you who don't, pull up Google, type in Dark Side of the Moon, click on images, and you'll see the cover. It's a black cover with a prism in it, and the prism has a stream of light going in one side and then a spectrum of light coming out of the other. This prism visual is a great way to explain the next step of our process, which is called filling the gap. Back to Bow Mountain Resort. Like I said, we're going to get 60%, but we still need to make up that 40%, and that 40% is the gap. That gap is going into the prism, that 40%. What we need to determine is what specific resort targets are going to help us get to that revenue goal. So if you picture a prism, you've got the light going in, as I said, and on the other side, you have these rainbow colors coming out. Each one of those colors of the rainbow represent a different target that you have to figure out to determine how to get you your revenue goal, how to make up that 40%. So again, Bow Mountain Resort. Well, who are our core targets? Well, in the summer, we have golfers, and there's really two types of golfers. I'll touch on that in a second. You have winter, which is primarily families, maybe some friends' getaways, and then you have groups and weddings that make up the balance. So key to this then is of that 40%, of that $12 million, how many million is going to come from golfers? How much is going to come from winter, and how much is going to come from group weddings? for the purposes of our wonderful podcast discussion today, let's say 50% is going to come from the summer and golfers, 35% is going to come from winter, and the balance of that 15% is going to come from group or wedding activity. Typically, you'll calculate out these percents based on length of opportunity. If you think about the summer in Michigan, there are more months to generate revenue with golfing than the few months of winter. So that's why we're sort of playing with these different percents. But there's a little more to that. You've got to look at two factors with this. And one is, what does the competitive environment look like? And secondly, is Bow Mountain Resort in a leadership position or is it in a challenger position? I'm going to talk about this a little more in a second, but let's talk about the competitive environment first. In Michigan, there's over 650 golf courses. That doesn't mean they're all resorts, but there are a fair number of resorts we need to compete against in order to get our golfers, in order to get that golf revenue. Understanding this, you sort of have to break down your target, not into a percent or a demographic, but what is the desire? So for example, with golfers, there's really two types of targets. And if you're ever on Instagram and you're looking at pictures of golfers at the resort, you're going to see one of two types of pictures. The first one is that golfer facing out away from the camera towards the course and hitting a tee shot. That's what I like to call me versus the course. That person is really highly competitive, and to convert them, you have to play up on the ego. You have to play up on the testosterone of, we are worthy competition for you to beat. And for them, sometimes it isn't who they golf with, it's the course itself. The other picture you will see is that group shot of, let's say, 8 or 12 guys or women with their arms around each other, and that's the buddy shot. Now, the difference here is that, well, yeah, they like golfing. Often, these people are more concerned about your resort and what else can you do there? What's to eat? Is there a bar at night? Are there microbreweries around? What other activities you can do? Because it's less about golf, although that is the anchor activity, and it is more about how do they fill out their weekends and just have a great time. Again, two different targets here, me against the course and the buddy trip. So as we look at that 50% of golf, we need to figure out how many people of that 50% are going to be me versus the course and how many are buddy trips. In general, the buddy trip is going to account for a lot more than me against the course. However, the difference is, if I have a competitive course, a one let's say that is ranked in Golf Digest, I will attract me against the course golfers from around the nation. Your typical buddy trip will be 3 to 4 hours from the resort. So even how you approach media messaging and how you're going to attract them and building out that desire, it's going to be different based on each one of these golf desires or these golf targets. Secondly, since we're talking about golf here, this isn't just about getting them to golf there. It's about converting them to stay. We have a resort. On our resort, we have hotels. We need to get them to stay. And this gets interesting because now you're not just looking at other resorts as a competition. You are looking at nearby hotels that are less expensive as the competition here. A quick non-fictitious story that I can tell you on this is when I worked on Colonial Williamsburg, they attracted a lot of families to the historical area, to the working colonial village. However, the problem was the majority of those people did not stay at the resort that is adjacent to the historical village. In fact, many people would stay several miles down the road at a budget inn or a Hampton Inn, where it was less expensive because they didn't see the difference in staying there. And this is interesting because just because you want to attract them to whether it's golf, like in Bow Mountain Resort or Colonial Williamsburg, to come to the Colonial Village. Now, here's the interesting part. More revenue is going to come in both of those situations for people to stay on the resort and people to eat at the restaurant on the resort. So with Bow Mountain, we have to look at the competition nearby and figure out what is the difference in price. Now, if we reduce the prices of our hotel, yeah, we're going to get more people to stay, but it's also going to hit our revenue goal. It is going to reduce the revenue generated from every guest that we attract. A better alternative would be to increase the value proposition. So if I stay at the resort, I am going to get the following benefits by staying on the resort. Now, if you ever looked at Disney or stayed at Disney, they get this. And for people who stay at Disney and on the Disney resort, you get a lot more value. You get access to characters. You get obviously proximity, you're closer. And in some cases, you get extended hours. So Disney built out that value proposition so that there's a certain cachet with staying on the resort that you wouldn't get if you stayed down the road, like let's say in a Hampton Inn. So we talked about the reverse ROI so far. We touched on filling the gap, the dark side of the moon part of this. Then we broke it down to targets, golf, winter, weddings slash groups. And then within golf, we really focused in on a desire. The next step is to build out the plan, to take the money and allocate it accordingly in order to convert the targets to get to the $12 million. For each target, you need to create a campaign. And the beauty of the marketing world we live in today is with digital segmentation, with the ability to micro-target, we can have multiple targets within a brand and then build campaigns by desire to drive conversion, to drive people to come. Within the campaigns for each target, you're going to look at what is the pricing options, the packaging, the promotional strategy to convert these people. In resorts in particular, if I bundle things together like golf, several nights, and meals, and offer one price, that packaging price has a better conversion rate than if I make everything a la carte. So you really need to look at what is your promotional strategy, how are you going to market the resort in a way that you generate as much revenue from each guest as you can. Finally, you need to build out a channel strategy. I'm not going to get into that too much today, but there's really three parts you want to look at is interrupt, intercept, re-engagement. The goal of interrupt is to connect with people through probably more traditional media or digital marketing to get them to not only think about the resort, but consider it when it comes time to plan. Intercept, and I'm going to expand on this in just a second, is looking at people who are actively planning their vacation. We want them to think about Bow Mountain Resort with Interrupt, but we need to convert them and intercept to choose Bow Mountain Resort over other resorts in Michigan. And finally, re-engagement is looking at people who have been here in the past and through direct marketing, reach out to them, get them to come back. Key to conversion, specifically in intercept, is how do I influence the decision? Think of it this way, and I write about this in my book, it's in the chapters called Decision Path. Every considered product has a decision path. These are a series of decisions somebody makes in order to finally choose the product they're going to buy. An example of this is in automotive, I identify 22 macro decisions somebody makes when purchasing a vehicle. By understanding this decision path for automotive, I worked with brands to develop better content to convert, to influence car buyers to choose their product over the competition. Because instead of just marketing five generic why buys of a car, I focused in with these brands on what is the specific decision this target is going to make based on their desire and how can this brand win. Let's go back to our Bow Mountain Resort. Similar to automotive, did a similar exercise in travel and identified nine core decisions. These decisions are, what do I want to do? Where can I go? What can I do there? And then I started to get into logistics. Where do I stay? How do I get there? How much do I pay? How do I get around? When do I go? And finally, what do you think? Several observations on this decision path. Number one, what do I want to do is normally done offline. What I mean by that is people usually discuss that amongst themselves and say, hey, what do you want to do this weekend? Well, let's go golfing. All right, then you get to the next part. Where can I go? And they may go and Google it, or they may just be throwing out names of different resorts because they've been to many in Michigan. Hopefully, they've been to our Bow Mountain Resort, so we're on the list. The next question is critical. What else can I do there? Because you can golf at many places. Often, what puts a resort over the top versus another is the other activities they can do there. And the activities could be a spa, the activities could be tennis, the activities could be eating, it could be a microbrew. It gets back to what is the energy based on the desire in that experience. Instead of just promoting golf, you really need to promote the entire weekend. And there's a big difference there. Lucky for us, a lot of our competition just markets themselves as the best golfing in Michigan. Well, if everybody's the best golfing, it sort of becomes white noise and mutes everything out. Our tactic, though, is going to be to, especially for the buddy trip, is to sell the weekend, is to sell the golf, sure, but then to sell other things that group can do, whether it's male or female, either on the resort or nearby. But again, I want to control the itinerary for these people so I can maximize the dollars that are going to be kept by the resort. Another question with the decision path you got to ask is, where am I in the decision path? Am I in a leadership position or am I in a challenger position? And often that comes down to by target. So for example, let's just for the sake of argument say our resort has really good golf and we're in a leadership position. It's written up in golf publications. It's all good. We have the credibility. Winner, let's say, not so much. In fact, our skiing's subpar. So what we need to do with families is really spend a little more on the top of that decision path on the what, where can I go and what can I do there to convert these people. Because our skiing is subpar relative to other resorts, we need to amp up the other activities. We need to give them a can't miss fun itinerary to get families to come to the resort versus the other competition that may have better skiing. So depending on if you're in a leadership position or a challenger position, you're going to look at that decision path. You're going to look at your promotional packaging differently. This brings me to sort of how we approach this with Primal Shopper, specifically with a survey. The survey is designed to do several things. Obviously, if you have a copy of the book, we actually type out shoppers to determine their preference, their motivations when they actually purchase a specific product. The other part, though, is the decision path. So with travel, like I said, there's nine decisions here. What we also do then is look at what channels influenced each one of these decisions. And that is powerful because now I can go and figure out, well, if I'm not doing very well and where can I go, meaning I'm not appearing on those lists, we can look at what channels influence that decision and micro focus our marketing to convert those people. It becomes a really powerful tool because I can look at their preference combined with where is the influential sources that are moving them to purchase. So if you want to learn more about this, and there's a lot to this, obviously, than a 20-minute podcast, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I would be happy to talk to you further about a Primal Shopper survey and how it could help make your marketing more effective. So just to recap this podcast, the first part we talked about is the reverse ROI. Critical to that is the habit line. And how much revenue does my marketing have to make? What is that gap? And then taking that and going retro with the dark side of the moon, with the prism metaphor, and talking about how do I need to take that gap and break it down to specific targets, to specific desires, in order for me to now communicate and effectively convert people to come to my resort, in case of our fictitious Beaumont Resort, in order to hit my $30 million revenue goal. So that wraps up our discussion on reverse ROI and the dark side of the moon. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, I would encourage you to subscribe to future podcasts on primalshopper.com or subscribe on your favorite podcast service like iTunes, Anchor, or Google. I just mentioned a Primal Shopper survey. If you are interested not only in the survey, but other ways Primal Shopper can increase the effectiveness of your marketing, feel free to contact me on LinkedIn and I would be happy to answer any questions. Finally, if you haven't picked up a copy of Primal Shopper yet, please do because if you like this podcast, you're going to love the book. Well, that's it for now. Until next time, this is Eric Bowe on the Primal Shopper podcast. Take care, everyone.